Next up is Inside Finance. Inside Finance is a special feature of this program every week where we discuss in depth the financial and economic challenges of our time and explore possible solutions. Here is your host this week, Stanford Simon.
Pleasant good day to Grenada, Caracou, Piti Martinique, the rest of the Eastern Caribbean. I am Stanford Simon. This is Inside Finance, and today I continue to have the man himself who is within the Ministry of Finance, who is permanent secretary there, Mr. Timothy Entwined. We have a lot to talk about today, especially lately we heard that Grenada was placed on a blacklist. I want to ask him about that and get further explanation. I am Stanford Simon. This is Inside Finance. With me in the studio is Mr. Timothy Entwined. We take a word from our sponsors. We come back and continue the discussion right here on Inside Finance. All our listeners and supporters of the SGBC radio programs, you can now download the SGBC app on your Android phone. Go to the Play Store and get involved. Listen to some great music, great preaching, sermonette, testimonies. Great thing is happening at the SGBC Grenada.com, and the app is available to you. Go download it from the Play Store to your Android phone. SGBC. It is available to you, an app that you can use wherever you are. Music will be available to you wherever you are now. You do not have to wonder, where is the radio? Download it on your Android phone and carry it with you wherever you go. The SGBC app is available to you in the Play Store. Welcome back. Thank you for being with me today. Good day to you, Mr. Timothy Entwined.
Good day, Pastor Simon, and good day to all our listeners home and abroad.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
You must be a very busy man these days.
Very busy. Not these days. That's been some time now.
Yeah, been a while.
But I'm giving God thanks, and I never ever take for granted the privilege I have to serve my country in this particular capacity. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of thankless work, but it's my country. And for that reason, I've always reminded myself and my colleagues in the Ministry of Finance that we have a very important responsibility and opportunity to serve our country. And that is very powerful when we think about the sacrifices we make every day to serve. And I say every day, including weekends, but that is the nature of the business. So I'm happy to serve.
Wonderful. Now, the big question, starting with it. Last week, the EU placed Grenada on a blacklist of tax havens. Please comment on this issue, starting with an explanation of harmful tax practices that we have been having or have occurred.
Right. Thank you, Pastor Simon. And I think it's an important issue for us to talk about. Let me just start with this harmful tax practices issue. For the last decade and a half or so, the developed countries, many of them from Europe, have come down very hard on small developing countries because of what they call unfair tax competition or harmful tax practices. What does that really mean? Simply put, international companies come to some countries, small or developing countries, where they pay less taxes or lower tax rates than they do in their home countries. So, for example, a European company, business, may come to the Caribbean and invest in the Cayman Islands, for example, and instead of paying 30% or 25% in terms of corporate income tax, they may be paying 5 or 10. And that lower tax rate attracts them to the Caribbean, for example. That is frowned upon by the developed and big countries because they feel that they're losing revenues to these smaller countries because of what they call harmful tax practices. So what they want is for countries to, and very often sometimes what compounds it is the fact that these international companies are pay lower taxes than even the local companies. So you may have a situation in a country where international companies are paying, say, 15% and local are paying 30%. Mm. So those that they consider harmful, and therefore they've come down very hard over the years on this issue. And many of the Caribbean countries and elsewhere have made a living on international financial services. So if you think about Cayman Islands, they're into captives. You think about Bermuda. You think about British Virgin Islands, Bahamas, Barbados to some extent. These are major, what we used to call offshore, but they're now called international financial centers. Mm-hmm. So there's been this, I won't say war, but this struggle going on between the developed and the developing countries on what they call harmful tax practices. So what they've been doing over time is this naming and shaming, all right? This blacklist and so on. So that is the background, if you will, of what this is all about. Now, to the substance at hand, the issue at hand. Grenada was placed on a EU blacklist of tax havens last week. We are very, very surprised and frankly very disappointed with that ruling. Well, not ruling, that release from the European Union. Here's why. First of all, Grenada is not an international financial center. Grenada has not been in that business for well over a decade. In fact, all of the banks and international financial institutions that were in the offshore sector, those were deregistered a long time ago, closed, licenses withdrawn, revoked. So Grenada is not doing international financial services business, okay? Mm-hmm. That's point one. But even more importantly is the fact that Grenada has subjected itself to review by the Global Forum, which is an international body that is responsible for matters of tax transparency and exchange of information. And two reviews done by that, including up to very recently, rated Grenada as largely compliant. Largely compliant. So the body that deals with this says that we're largely compliant, but the European Union is saying that we're not. That's the problem. In addition to that, Grenada has signed 32 tax information exchange agreements. 32. 14 of which are with European Union member countries. Okay, so Grenada has been very active in signing tax information exchange agreements. So we've not been lazy or idle. We've actually been doing quite a lot. So we have with Switzerland, we have with the UK, we have with many other European countries. Now, it appears that 10 of the European countries, we have not yet signed with them. And that's not our fault. It's a simple question of they have not been ready to sign. We are ready to sign whenever they are ready to sign. So we've done quite a few, but there are 10 that are not yet done because they are not yet ready. So it appears what happened is that the European Union got lists from the 10 countries that we have not signed with. And they blacklisted us, these 10 countries. And as a result of that, the European Union simply adopted the list from these 10 countries on a black. So while many European countries already have agreements signed with Grenada, those that did not have, the 10 that did not have, simply put us on a list, a blacklist. And the European Union adopted that wholesale without talking or asking questions. So we believe that the list of tax havens, certainly with Grenada included, is ill-conceived, ill-informed, and lacking in transparency. The very thing that we're supposed to be trying to do, tax transparency and exchange of information. So we completely reject that list. And we are, in fact, are asking for the removal of Grenada from that list. We do not believe that inclusion of Grenada is justified. In addition to us not having financial services in Grenada, signing 32 tax information exchange agreements, including 14 with the European Union member countries, we have also concluded an agreement with the United States of America under the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, FATCA. And in fact, that's going to go to Parliament very shortly. We've already concluded an agreement with the U.S. We have an agreement with the U.K. We have one with the U.S. All, big major trading partners. So we absolutely do not agree with this. In addition to that, the Caribbean Financial Action Task Force, which looks at our dealings in anti-money laundering and combating terrorism and transparency issues and so on, just recently gave Grenada a clean bill of health, saying that we had our legal framework and our administrative framework are up to the standard, and therefore there's no need for additional monitoring in respect of our legal framework. We have the right framework. So I'm saying all of this to say, from the Global Forum, which is the international body responsible for tax transparency and exchange of information, from the Caribbean Financial Action Task Force, from the US, all of them are satisfied with what Grenada is doing. And therefore, we feel that the European Union is really ill-advised, ill-conceived. But very interestingly, the same Global Forum, in a letter of June 19th, which is last Friday, raised concerns about the EU blacklist. That's the same body who is internationally responsible for this matter. They question the methodology, and they question the inclusion of countries like Grenada on that list. And they have said, the Global Forum, that they stand ready to properly explain what countries like Grenada have done to ensure compliance, because the truth is we've done a lot. And I must add, at great cost to the country, because for a small country to take on a lot of these things, we don't get a lot of those benefits. Those really are benefits for the large countries. But as a responsible country and recognizing, you know, our role in the League of Nations, the Community of Nations, we have been doing our part. So I think it was very revealing that the Global Forum, which is a body responsible for tax transparency and exchange of information, actually came out and criticized the European Union for the list. Because if you set up a body to be responsible, that body gives the country a rating of largely compliant. How could you then, a couple member countries by their own, just go out and decide to put out a list? That is wrong. And therefore, we are going to strongly resist this move, and we are going to be making very strenuous efforts not just locally but regionally with our counterparts, because other countries are involved. Grenada is not the only one, although of course we're concerned about Grenada first and foremost. But there are several other Caribbean countries that have been named, and we plan to wage a very strong struggle against what we believe is manifestly unfair, not transparent, and lacking in any kind of proper information about the status of Grenada's tax transparency. So in sum, that's where we are.
Well, thank you for explaining, because I think it was important. When I heard it myself, it's something that one wonder what is happening. When we thought, for all the interviews we're doing, we was doing very well, and with the international bodies, the IMF have been helping us and working to get away with the World Bank. So I'm very happy that you explained that to us. Just going back a bit, what is the status of the National Plan 2030? I know we spoke about that 2 weeks ago. What is the status on that?
Yes, good. And I'm glad you asked, because I want to make sure the nation is kept abreast of developments on this very important initiative undertaken by our nation. Where we are now, as I indicated, is that we have the full committee in place. We had our first meeting, a joint meeting of the steering committee and the technical working group. And our second meeting is scheduled for Friday, June 26th at the National Stadium. And that meeting is going to focus on the visioning. What do we want to see for Grenada? What the vision is, what could be and should be for this country. And of course, once we've had that discussion internally, we come up with a draft vision. Vision and statement and vision and so on, we will at some stage be coming out to the community, to the country, to stakeholders, and asking them to comment on that. You know, validate whether they agree or do not agree with what we see as a vision for Grenada going forward. Now, keep in mind, this steering committee is representative of the country. So we feel very good about the composition of the committee itself. But having said that, the committee still must go out and touch base with the people. The man and woman in the street, as we would say, grassroots level, and ensure that what we are coming up with is in fact what they want. So the people will tell us whether or not this is what they want for their country as we plan for the next 15, 20 years.
Could you just remind us who are the members of the steering committee?
Certainly. So we have Honorable Oliver Joseph, who's the Minister for Planning, and he's a chairman. Mr. Andre Lewis, who represents the Grenada Trade Unions Council. Mrs. Pettifer Lewis-Smith, the Grenada Private Sector Organization, Reverend John Lewis, the Alliance of Evangelical Churches, Mr. William Joseph, Conference of Churches in Grenada, Mrs. Joan Purcell, Civil Society, Mr. Judd Cadet, Youth, Dr. Dunstan Campbell, Agriculture, Mr. Carlton Frederick, New National Party, Mr. Ferron Lowe, National United Front, and Mr. Vincent Roberts, National Democratic Congress. So those are the 11 members of the steering committee.
Thank you so much, listeners. We're going to take a word from our sponsors. We come back, continue the discussion here with Mr. Timothy Antwine, Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Finance. This is Inside Finance. I am Stanford Simon. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be back in a minute.
One call does it all. All your basic construction needs, backhoe, compressor, bobcat, and acroprop services. Make one call. One call does it all. 443-2894 or 409-1533. For bobcat, backhoe, compressor, or acroprop services, call One Call Construction Services. 443-2894 or 409-1533. Make it one call.
Welcome back. This is Inside Finance. I am Stanford Simon. With me in the studio is Mr. Timothy Antwine, Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Finance. Now, Mr. Timothy, I understand New Zealand is helping Grenada to explore its geothermal energy potential. What is the status of this work and where are we at this point? Because I know that had been a heavy discussion within the last 12 months. What is happening with that?
Right. So we're very much moving forward with that work. Let me start with a context. Grenada's electricity right now, only about 2% is generated from what we call renewable sources. In this case, solar PV, the sun. The other 98% comes from diesel. So you can see how dependent we are on fossil fuel, which is, of course, gives out carbon emissions and it hurts our environment. So the government of Grenada wants to see us move the amount of renewables we use to generate electricity in this country. In fact, our aim is that by 2025, we should have at least 25% renewables in Grenada's electricity generation. At least 25%. And of course, we like to do that a lot sooner. But the reality is that we're only at 2% right now. So, you know, to get from 2 to 25, that's a big jump and a lot has to be done. Now, this is where geothermal comes in. Geothermal has the potential to be a game changer with respect to energy or electricity generation because it is a renewable resource, which means it's not intermittent, it is constant. You can rely on it to be stable and consistent. It does not have nothing to do with the price of oil or whatever. It's in the ground and you basically have to get it out and use it. So what have we done? With New Zealand, the government of Grenada signed a cooperation agreement to help us explore the potential for geothermal in Grenada. New Zealand has experience in that, has a lot of expertise in geothermal. So we went to somebody who knows the business. Over the last several months, concluding in around April, New Zealand did what they call 3G work, geology, geophysical, geochemical. Basically, when took samples in the Mount St. Catherine general area, various points around that general area of heat sources in the earth to determine the prospectivity or the potential of that area to generate geothermal. So they actually took samples, which they are now testing, and we expect a report around the end of June, the end of this month. What we've been told is that the prospectivity looks promising. That's what we've been told. But we have not yet received a report from New Zealand. As I said, we expect that report around the end of June. And what we propose to do is to convene, after we have received the report and reviewed the report in Grenada, that is the government of Grenada, energy officials and so on, we will then convene a meeting of development partners in July to discuss how they can help us to move forward with our geothermal development. A few things have to happen. Let me just be clear. From the time we agree that geothermal is there, the potential is there to develop in geothermal, you're talking about 5-6 years to actually invest in it and develop it. We have to have a legal framework for geothermal development. We have to do a law to guide that. Because if you're going to bring investors in, there has to be some legal framework, some enabling environment that provides certainty for them to invest. So that's an important thing. We obviously will need some help to get the legislation prepared. That's one area. Secondly, we actually have to do some drilling, what they call some test wells, to actually determine more concretely what potential exists. We've been talking to the British, for example, about a drill risk fund where they will give us some grants to help us to test. Because what we want to do in Grenada, which is different from what many developing countries do, rather than give some private sector an agreement and tell them go out and check and take the risk, and of course, if there is thing, then they get most of the benefits, we want to prove the resource, establish okay. that it exists. Once we've done that, we do two things. We reduce the risk for the private sector because they know with certainty that the potential is there. But more importantly, we give Grenada the opportunity to strike an agreement that brings the maximum benefits to Grenada. Because with certainty, you can then ensure that the split in terms of the benefits comes, Grenada gets its fair share. If the opposite is done, because uncertainty exists about the potential, the private sector takes most of the risk and therefore takes most of the benefits. And if it works out, the country gets very little. In this approach that we're doing, where we prove the resource first, using grant support and so on from the British and elsewhere, we are then in a position to get an agreement that brings max. So when you start to do geothermal and the revenue started coming, Grenada will get a good share. In fact, we'll get the lion's share because Grenada, in fact, has invested in establishing that the resource exists, proving the resource exists, and therefore reducing the risk for the private sector. That's a very important issue. What happens in some countries is that they don't do that. They sign these agreements, which are very one-sided. And if and when, one, the investors take years to actually come up with the money to invest, so nothing is happening for a long time. They have an agreement, but nothing is happening because they're speculating, they're trying to raise the money. And that is not good, because while they're doing that, they have exclusive rights. Nobody else could come in, and nothing is happening. Nothing is happening. But they have an agreement that locks up the government. So to avoid that, what we're doing is to make sure we establish, does this resource exist and in commercial quantities to make it viable? Once we've done that and we reduce the risk, then we can enter an agreement and we could get our fair share or maximum share from any revenues that will flow. And not just that, we can proceed much faster with the project because you do not have a private sector trying to find money to raise for the high risk because we've already taken that risk, what we call the risk. We've de-risked the project. And this de-risking is very important if we're going to get a good deal for Grenada. So what we will do in July is we'll ask partners to come. We'll have the British come. We'll have Japan. We'll have, of course, New Zealand. We'll have the CDB. We'll have IDB, among others. The Germans have expressed interest and a number of other developments, about 10 or 12. Of them have actually expressed interest in helping Grenada. And we will ask them to take responsibility for various things. So we'll say, well, you will help us draft the geothermal law. The next one we say, you will help us actually to set up the drill risk fund so we could drill, test drill. The other one will help us with structuring an agreement so we could enter into with the private sector. Another one will help us with technical assistance so we have the competent staff in the ministry to help analyze these things and to negotiate these agreements. In other words, we'll carve out a roadmap that gives all of the partners a stake and a contribution, but based on what Grenada wants, not what they want, what we want, and we will do it with their help. So that is what we plan for July. And I just want to make the point that we're very much pushing forward with this renewables program. And on the geothermal side, that's a major focus for us at this time.
Okay, thank you. What is the status of the Draft Electricity Supply Act? I know we have been working on that for a while. Where are we on that?
That's a very good question, and it's important that you've asked the question to link it with what I just said about geothermal, because to go forward with geothermal properly, we have to make amendments to the Electricity Supply Act. Okay. We have to change it, because right now, the current Electricity Supply Law of 1994 does not provide any incentive or requirement for us to go into to going to renewables, whether it's geothermal or wind or tidal or whatever else. It does not. And that is perhaps one of the reasons, not the only one, pricing has been an issue, but that's one of the reasons why we only have 2% after 20 years with this agreement. We must change the Electric Supply Act if we're going to get serious investment in geothermal. Whoever that is going to invest in geothermal, whether it is Grenlec itself or whether it is going to be some other external party, we must change the Electric Supply Act. So where we are now is that we have been back and forth with Grenlec in terms of a facilitator. I think we're almost there in terms of agreeing on the name of the facilitator. We had further discussions last week. And my expectation is that come July, we'll actually start face-to-face discussions about certain things in that legislation. In addition to the discussions we have in with Grenlec, the government of Grenada will also be meeting with other parties, whether it is the private sector, the Hotel Association, the Trade Union Council, because this is a national issue. And I must say, Pastor Simon, we've given ample time for people to consider the legislation. Okay. Sometimes government is accused of rushing legislation through parliament, and I will concede that there are times we've had to move very fast. We've consulted, but perhaps not given as much time as people would like, but we've had deadlines to meet under the homegrown program. In this case, this instance, the electric supply, the draft has been out since February. This is 4 months now, and therefore, nobody could say they haven't had time to see the legislation. And the reason why the government, you know, is being very keen is to give people maximum time because we want to ensure transparency. The last time we had an Electricity Supply Act in Grenada, it was drafted by Grenlec. The government accepted it. There was very little or no consultation, and it was approved. We do not want to do that this time around. We've made it very clear. We want the process to be transparent, which means that we want people to see well in advance what it is that the government is proposing, take feedback, and to make adjustments. One of the things that we've heard, for example, in the consultation so far is that the minister has too many powers under the act, draft law. That we will address, and I'm confident that will be addressed in a way that is satisfactory. But there are other things that we need to be looking at, and so we want to make sure people understand. Because you see, Pastor Simon, beyond geothermal, the cost of electricity and the access and so on is important for development and for job creation. And you always have to go back to these big overall objectives or goals of the country and the government. Create jobs, raise the level of economic activity. And to do that, you have to address this issue of energy. So I want to just assure you that we'll be coming back out very shortly with a further round of consultations.
Mm. I'm almost out of time. Time ran very quickly, but I have some other questions I want to ask you, and I think I'll invite you to come back here next week. Don't send anybody else until I finish with this question I have for you. But quickly, what other legislation is being worked on at the moment?
Thank you, sir. And as guided and directed, I will not send anybody else next week. But seriously, we're working on a couple of things. I want to mention the Bankruptcy Act or Bankruptcy Law, which is a very old law. The rules, the winding up rules that we work with are 1909. Could you believe it? In 2015. This is amazing. But really unacceptable. So we are working on a bankruptcy legislation that will basically provide for a much clearer, modern framework for businesses to operate. Because let's face it, in life and in business, bankruptcies will happen. It's the nature of business. What you want to do when it happens is that you have a very modern legislation that can be handled the matter very quickly. And it's like American Airlines. American Airlines went into Chapter 11, filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy 2 years ago, whatever. They came out recently and they're making profits again. So you have to have the enabling environment to allow that to happen quickly if and when the need arises. So that there is a clear idea of how businesses are wound up if in fact they have to be wound up. And that goes to the heart of our doing business agenda. You have to have a good environment, an incentive for people to open, but you also have to have incentive for people to close and exit so that they could do something else. Mm-hmm. Because that's how resources move. So bankruptcy is one. Tax administration is another. The electric supply we just talked about. And then we want to look at labor code and pensions. So that's some of the big legislation that we're looking at going forward.
Sorry, I had to rush you. I'm sure we'll find some time to further explain. Thank you so much, Mr. Timothy Antoine, for joining us today. I really appreciate your sharing, especially about the first question dealing with the EU placing us on the blacklist. Thank you again.
Most welcome.
All right, folks, you've been listening there to Inside Finance with Mr. Timothy Antoine. He promised me he'll be here next week. Look forward to it. I'll ask him some of the questions I have left. And for you all listeners, don't forget, you can go to our website, sgbcgrenada.com, on the Encounter interview. This program is uploaded there and also on the Ministry of Finance website. Have a great week. Join me here next week at the same time for Inside Finance with Mr. Timothy Antoine, who is a permanent secretary in the Ministry of Finance. I am Stanford Simon. Wish you a blessed week.
You have been listening to another edition of Inside Finance, a program that explores the financial and economic challenges of our time. Join us next week for another edition.